the invitation. I'm really glad to be here to share with all of you some of our experiences in Peru. I have been involved a little bit more than 13 years in academia mainly, but I had some projects in collaboration with the Ministry of Health. But 3 weeks ago, a new president was appointed in Peru, and a new Minister of Health was also appointed. And it was very interesting to listen that in his first speech, the Minister of Health recognized the importance of appropriate information and communication technologies and informatics during his term. And fortunately, the Minister of Health called me 2 weeks ago to be part of the General Office of Statistics and Informatics, which I greatly and honored accepted. I think there is a lot. There are a lot of challenges. I think Ramesh spoke very well about all the kind of challenges that are in the Ministry of Health in a developing world. But I think there are also a lot of opportunities, and I would like to mention some of them in this presentation. So, first of all, I would like to stress two key messages. And those are the messages that I actually am in this, my first week. I always tell the minister, the advisors, and the general directors too. The first thing is that just giving cell phones to everybody will not solve anything. I always tell the people that this is not just about the technology. From the informatics point of view, technology is just one component, but we also have two important components, that is the information and the people. And the information, as Ramesh said also, we need to carefully take attention to the data flow, the information flow, the workflow. Because if I just put technology when there is a chaos in the information process and in the information workflows, I will just only informatize the chaos, and that's not good. So as I heard once, you know, if you put garbage in, there will be garbage out. So we need to pay carefully attention on the process. And the second thing is the people. As also it was mentioned that end users have to find a value and have to find the technology useful in order to be used. Because we can have the latest technology, but if they and developed by the best engineers, but if end users did not find the value, also it will not be useful. So with this introduction, I would like to mention also some of the context. Latin America is experiencing an explosion in technology revolution. There are more than 520 million cell phones right now in Latin America. So Latin America is now the second biggest market in cell phones. Peru is not the exception and has been experienced also an exponential growth of cell phones. According to the last national survey, there are a penetration rate of 73.1, and this is in households. Right now, we have more than 27 million cell phones, and we have more cell phones right now than people in Peru. Right? And comparing with the other technologies, definitely cell phones reach much more people than other kind of technologies like landline or even internet. And this is a slide taken from the UN report, mHealth for Development, released on 2009, and highlights some of the main activities of mHealth in the developing world. The report highlights especially five countries with the highest mHealth activity, and Uganda, Rwanda, South Africa, India, and Peru were the five countries highlighted with most of the mHealth activities. In Peru particularly, we have also experienced and developed some projects involving the using of PDAs, for example, for data collection of sexual health at the national level. We also have experience and developing cell phone systems based on IVRs for also data collection. And we have experience with projects regarding using text messages for educational messages and for supporting therapy, like, for example, trying to improve adherence for people living with HIV, chronic diseases, and so on. But I would like to comment a little bit about a case example. This is Ventanilla, a urban marginal district in Lima, where a lot of people, immigrants from different countries and rural areas of Peru, are coming here. This is an example of one of the avenues of Ventanilla, which this district does not have water. But if we pay carefully attention, in the corner of one of the streets, there is an internet cafe. So they don't have water, but they have internet cafe, and they are actually using it. It's very cheap. It's kind of 3 cents per hour to use the internet. We have also a healthcare center, in which, of course, as many other parts of the world, we are paper-based system. This is an obstetrician taking care of a pregnant woman. And in a baseline analysis, we found that the obstetrician were using 14 different papers to collect information for a first prenatal care visit. So, as you may understand, you know, all the kind of duplicate data that they collect when they take care of a pregnant woman. So this was one of the main problems, and working with the Minister of Health, we tried to find a solution to kind of deal with this kind of problem. Again, this is a problem of information, paper-based system. How can we deal with that? So with the support of the Inter-American Development Bank, in the mobile citizen program, this is one of the five projects that were chosen to support and use cell phones to improve health information systems. This is a partnership between Cayetano Heredia University, the Ministry of Health, and Movistar, which is a telecom company. Which is the idea? The idea is to first strengthen the health information system through implementing an electronic health record, and then supporting and empowering our pregnant women by sending personalized text messages. And this is complemented by also an IVR, which the pregnant woman can call a central phone line for free to get more further advice. So the first thing that we did is that we tracked all these 14 different formats that were collecting information about the pregnant woman. After several meetings with the Ministry of Health, we tried to decide which of these data would actually be useful for taking decisions. And finally, we after many, many meetings, I'm telling you in a few seconds, but actually it took several months, actually kind of 1 year, to try to really decide which is the really useful data that will help them to take decisions. First in paper, but then the idea was to convert this into electronic health record, which then can be used several times, requested by the regional healthcare centers or even the Ministry of Health. So the idea is a change of the paradigm, right? Of instead of collecting 14 different formats, the idea is to collect just data once, and then it can be used many times. So then we develop electronic health record with the end user since the beginning of the project, exploring their perceptions, exploring their values, exploring their needs, because we found that it would be very important to first consider all the perceptions and values before developing any kind of technology. We also implemented a decision support system so the obstetrician, based on the symptoms, can also have an aid on the diagnosis patterns. And then at the end, based on the information that they enter once, they can then select the reports. So in PDF, they can generate the reports. This is the initial step that we did, because ideally, as you know, the data should go directly to the Ministry of Health, right? But we cannot change the paradigm, you know, in one day. So at this moment, and also based on the policies, they still need to have this paper-based format send it to the Ministry of Health. So with this system, and based on the evaluation that we did, the obstetricians were very satisfied, and actually it decreases the time from comparing with the paper-based system. And then the second component was the text messaging system. The text messaging system was developed in order to provide information to the pregnant woman about their prenatal visits and educational message. And we follow a pretty rigorous process for the design and validation, which involved not only focus group but also in-depth interviews and surveys to the pregnant women in several rounds up to get the final text message for the end users. This is just one of the examples of the focus group in which one of the pregnant women said, "Who would not want to receive text messages? It's a more personal relationship." Another said, "I will feel important, I will feel happy." And also the pregnant woman expressed the interest to receive not only educational messages, but also that those messages can have some motivational component. For example, one says, "Sometimes you feel alone, your husband is at work, and you are only with your child, so receiving those text messages will give me encouragement." Others say, "Sometimes because of all the changes that occur in your body, one feels sad, do not want to go out, don't want to do anything, and we would like something that makes us feel good." Complemented with that, we are conducting two evaluation studies. One of the studies is intended to increase the prenatal care visits, and the second is a cost-effectiveness analysis. And I would like to finish highlighting some of the challenges that also were highlighted by the other speakers. The first one is that we need to pay careful attention to the culture of the population and the importance of the local component. Not necessarily a system that works, let's say, in the jungle of Peru will work in the Andes of Peru. So that's why it's very important to explore the perceptions and the values and the needs of the people before developing any healthcare information system, either with mHealth or eHealth. Another important component is the public-private partnerships. In our case, we got interest, one of the telecom, to provide us with free text messages for this project. Another important component that now I have a lot of responsibility is the idea of governance and the policies and legislation. So it's incredible that in the last 10 years there was no single policy related to e-health or m-health coming from the Ministry of Health in Peru. Most of the legislation regarding data security and so on came from the presidents of ministers. Also, standards on interoperability is an important component that it was mentioned before. Training human resources and capacity building is super important, and at different levels. As I mentioned, you know, decision makers and people that are at the minister or vice minister or even advisors are not aware of the importance of having a health information systems. Many of those think that, you know, just technology will solve anything. So this is pretty scary. So giving appropriate training to people that make decisions is very important. And, of course, also providing training on e-health, informatics, and m-health to the healthcare workers at the front line is also very important. Impact evaluation, as it was mentioned, is also important because there are still up to this time, many, many, many pilots, but there are few projects that are actually have been scaled. So scalability is also a very important component. And finally, I would like to also stress that, as Raymond has mentioned, coordination is essential. There are, in my first week, I have discovered that only at the Ministry of Health, there are more than 100 applications, 100 of web-based applications that they are not collected between others, and the Ministry of Education also collects some health data, and other ministers also collect some kind of health data, and they don't communicate. So actually, during my first week, I have started, you know, coordination with all the stakeholders in order to try to interoperate and to try to get data coordinated. So I think there are many other challenges that we need to deal, but I think we are in the right pathway. Thanks.
Thanks, everyone, for some great information and presentation. What a distinguished panel. And I'm sorry we are running a bit short on the time. We wanted to have more question and answer time. We've only got a little while. I just want to briefly say we're going to have the presentations uploaded to the conference website by the end of today. Some are already on there. And that several of the panel members can stay after we end here at noon for you to talk with one-on-one. But what I would like to do is open it up to the floor for folks that may have some questions, generate some discussion here in our last few minutes to the panel. And I know there's been a lot of things on some of the issues, challenges, barriers, solutions to some of the things overall. Yes, gentlemen. Yeah, you're welcome to come up here and let's see if it'll.
It can roam around. It's already on. It's not on. There's a button on. It's a green button there. Well, you could use this, sir.
So Ramesh, I have a question for you. the concept of enterprise architecture, you mentioned this yesterday in the workshop and then again today, and oftentimes I find that is heavily loaded with a lot of technical jargon, and you've made a point both yesterday and today saying that there's more to it than that. If you could expand on that just a little bit about what you mean by that, because I think that has a lot of implications, that we're not going tech heavy, we're going with a more of a systems orientation, socio-technological. So that's what I'm thinking, but yeah.
Did you all hear, by the way? I don't know that this, okay. Just to respond it, I think Walter illustrated in his last sentence, I think before he ended, to say he, just in his first week in his office, he's still discovering he has hundreds some applications. Classic example of enterprise architecture not being in the forefront for people who have approached that solution for Peru. And I think I could safely say if Walter's going to continue next week, he's probably going to discover a couple of more extra ones. And he's long enough to do a serious inventory of systems in operation in Peru, he probably would find quite a few. Now, in the enterprise concept, there are two levels of enterprise concept. One is, I think, systematically thinking to say what is repeated and which sectors are actually collecting the same data. In the enterprise, we are talking about, you know, he's reporting to, I presume, Minister of Health, directly or indirectly, and the minister reports to the president, and the president is interested in the welfare of the country. We are talking enterprise in that high-level concept one. And the concept two is, enterprise is also the one he just demonstrated in the last screen about 10 forums that used to be collected. Now there's an integrated approach to understanding, which is an enterprise architectural approach, and still produce the PDF version out of the information system in a nascent paper-based form. So the output still looks and feels a piece of paper, but it is integrated enough that you can produce n number of reports, any number of reports. This is the technical architecture. Well, it assumes, I'm sure it's an SQL database of some kind, with many other lookup tables that is cross-referenced properly, and it services the end user. That's enterprise approach to thinking. What I would urge is, the framework for standards in developing country health information systems is a published document in 2007. It's the so-called HMN framework. It's going through the ISO process also for technical specs, but it is a high-level country information systems design model. And a book articulates mostly chapter by chapter on every single element that is necessary for thinking about the framework of how to approach this. And it is not technical jargon as much as it is conceptual. So it does not specify MySQL to be used or SQL and OpenN or Oracle, or it doesn't do any of that stuff. It simply articulates how do you have to think as a starting point? How do you engage stakeholders? And how do you create governance structures? How do you review the legislation and policy mandates for Walter if he's going to run the statistics office to know what his mandates are, what kinds of reports he needs to develop, for which what kinds of information systems needs are? So mobile health, our focus here, comes as one of the input-output devices in this broad scheme of framework. And we must be able to understand and appreciate that complexity to fit in. EA, Enterprise Architecture, in that context, is the two level. We sometimes often fix the airplane while it's flying. Okay, that's often the case in most of the information systems. And I don't have to narrate to imagine for you to say what would be the consequence. So we cannot land sometimes. These ideas of 40,000 feet has to land at some point. So enterprise architecture is key. Many times we buy windows and then we create an we have an architect fit that window for us in the new architectural space, or just because it's on sale, buy them hundreds of windows and then figure out an architecture to fit them. This is the danger side to not thinking it clearly. So EA approach is kind of a thoughtful way to design. And I think there are volume 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 to be written yet, but this is the volume 1 if you think about enterprise architecture. Sorry to have gone out of the scope of answering precisely, but it is difficult to discuss a 100-some page book in 1 minute.
Other questions? Okay, yeah, it is lunchtime. I just want
right. to...
Go ahead.
Yes, sir.
I just can say simply, I think Ray can comment further. There is serious effort being undertaken now to create geo data sets for countries to create a common map of facilities and baseline layers, just like a sandwich, have 5 layers and you can add more layer to get the taste, but the first 5 layers are important, including the bread. And we are talking about that conceptual frame where Ministry of Education knows where the schools are, Ministry of Health knows where the hospitals and the health facilities are, where the road networks are, where the airports are. These are critical information. This science has developed quite a bit in the last 30 years. We have not taken seriously in the health sector yet. So the approach to enterprise, in this case, national and subnational level geo data set, a geographic information system, core layers, including some base maps, as a turnkey so that you can put disease layers on top. That is being now seriously discussed, both at the WHO level, but at the countries, more importantly, some countries have already actuated. I know for a fact India does that now, and they know where the last village is in that map with the specific population data. And that is being pushed through all of the 10,000-some districts for them to adapt a geodata set. So that's kind of where you're going with it.
So I think GIS represents sort of the whole range of issues with the way we work sometimes. If you're attracted to GIS as a technology and it looks like neat things that you can do, you could actually waste a lot of time playing around with different technologies and not addressing any specific problem. So geospatial is another layer of information that technology is actually improving or increasing the opportunities of what we could actually do with that information. I know in one of the presentations they were actually, Heather was talking about, you could SMS your district and it would tell you the closest testing center. So in the U.S. you can SMS your zip code and it will tell you the closest HIV testing center. And I was thinking, well, actually the biggest challenge there is trying to come up with a better geospatial marker than district, because districts are too big in some places. So suddenly policies and local data structures that will make it work need to be put in place. Then the other thing I would say that there's a risk of, so if GIS as a technology tends to evolve in a silo as well, which there's a risk of that for any technology, if it's not part of the actual standards development and there's not consideration of interoperability and so forth, then it is a layer of information that potentially could be a missed opportunity because it doesn't connect with other health systems or other information systems being developed. So I think it's very promising, but I think it brings all the challenges that other technologies do.
I just want to add to what Ray said. From the technology standpoint, we have felt like for some of the CDC support systems, we need to add the GIS capabilities on there. In other words, technically it's taking the GPS coordinates out of your handheld device. It's creating a KML file or a shapefile on your desktop or your PC so that the GIS folks can actually work with it in ArcGIS or Google Maps. So then they can use it, you know, for their applications as they see fit for disease surveillance. So that technology to get to the KML files or the shape is very easy. It's, you know, it's out there. You can download it for free. It's an XML-based file that it creates. But anyway, technology-wise, it's an easy application.
There's another question from...
Yes, Prachi?
Kind of a question for the whole panel. In your experience, when you use PDAs to get responses from the end user, what has been the average response rate? Like here you can say usually there's a 30% response rate in any survey. By comparison, what is it when you're using PDA, you know, developing the
I'm going to start with a disclaimer of the fact that even for paper surveys in many of the countries that we work in, the response rate is exceptionally high. So it's not really, I'm not sure that it's connected to the technology so much. What I can say is that we tend to have more accurately completed questionnaires. But I don't know that there's a direct link between the technology being used to collect the information and the response rate. And if there is, I've just never seen any data about that.
Any other? One more question.
I was just going to add real quickly to that. We've done a little bit of PDA collection, data collection as well. And again, we didn't have anything that we documented per se because we weren't doing comparative, you know, analysis. But we did note anecdotally that. Especially we had one study that we did with a younger population, there was certainly an element of wanting to be a participant in the survey more. So I think anecdotally there is a bit more, but we didn't measure that either. So.
Yes.
Thank you.
Very good comment.
Can I just make a comment to that? I think we didn't clarify very well some of the different perspectives here, but some of the data collection activities, and Adam, tell me if I'm misspeaking, but a lot of those activities are around research, and actually the complexity and the required quality of the data and so forth that's being collected affords you to focus a little more on the technology, actually, because it's a focus sample that you're doing. Where the pushing health services out using technology, the programmatic side of it is slightly different. And I don't think we always clearly demonstrated when one was more supporting research and one was program. But there is a caveat there.
I think there's sufficient data to suggest by, I think MHealth Alliance has done a pretty good job in putting together some documents to show where MHealth can be a very appropriate avenue for healthcare delivery for the end user to directly benefit and cut down the delivery time and also make the individuals respond to the services that they need, whether it may be prenatal care or something else. That is reasonably well demonstrated by the studies that they have conducted, at least the reports that I've read. So I think the case for where this technology is making a dent in the healthcare delivery overall, that I think is now being sliced into finer areas. I think you may not have referenced directly, but I think this so-called assessment of these activities and the impact on the healthcare delivery is not fully realized and is not done in a systematic way. And it's not done for every activity that's being done. So in Walter's case of 100 projects that have MHealth implications, if he has 100 reports that says about the evaluation and see which one works better, perhaps that could be a way to go through. And yes, I think you're right about the orientation of this panel. It's difficult to respond to every single hat that people are wearing in so far as what they're thinking, but we'll do the best next time.
There is this wonderful working group in MHealth. I just want to reiterate. Laura Rainey, FHI 360, up here at the top. She is a co-chair of an MHealth working group for K4Health, and it has, 150 organization members, meets every few months. It's a wealth of information in mobile health, some very technical, some higher level. And so get with Laura, see some of her information, but you can continue discussions, interactions, definitely in that working group. It's a great, and MHealth Alliance is part of that group. So I encourage you, we're going to break now given the time, but I encourage you to please come up and talk with some of the panel members. Thank you very much.